And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I am Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. And we welcome you guys back to this Outback Bowl edition as we get to get into the Gophers Bowl game coming up here on Wednesday. All the ins and outs of that. We got some coaching carousel things to talk about, Luke. But it's been a while since I've seen you. How were the holidays?
The holidays were okay. I mean, I did catch a cold.
That's what happens when you have a child. Yeah. That's what I'm told, is they're just little disease monsters.
It's amazing how once you have, you have this daycare closed, right? They get sick, and that's great because then, you don't have to stay home from work because you already have to stay home from work because the daycare is closed. But then you're going to be sick during that time off. So, whatever. It is what it is.
It is what it is, huh? All right.
So, we'll go through my family depth chart later. But now, everybody's questionable.
Yeah, just like essentially the entire hat side of things for Minnesota.
Yeah.
So what else is new?
All right. So, before we get too much into this, a quick shout out for the Goal Line Club. They sponsored our 2019 season here. They're actually already sponsoring our 2020 season, which we're elated to have them on board for again. I want to thank all of you for supporting their events. For instance, the recent signing day event that we did that was just for Goal Line Club members, Ryan and I recorded. We interviewed PJ Fleck, which was very fun. Right. And for the 200 some of you that showed out, holy cow, that was amazing.
That was wild.
That was super fun.
That was a lot of fun. I mean, we got essentially 40 minutes of PJ Fleck, and I was able to talk recruiting with him.
Right.
And he was very lively. For those of you who remember back to that event, that interview with PJ was, how would you describe it? He had very little filter, which for those of you listening, thinking PJ Fleck is just a robot and he's only full of cliches. I wish you could have been at that event because that man was taking shots across the bow.
Yeah.
And he didn't care. And that was cool. I mean, just to be able to see him kind of be in his element, and him and I talking recruiting and Luke asking about 26-year-old punters. It's what we're all here for.
The authenticity was refreshing. I will also say that he definitely looked tired, which according to him, he hadn't slept in 4 days.
I was about to say he didn't sleep Tuesday night. I don't know about Monday night.
Yeah.
The day before signing day, he was up and trying to make sure everybody signed all night, especially with the defensive line coach. But
right.
It was awesome. And then we got to go upstairs at TCF Bank Stadium to hear the signing day social. And I believe folks got like an 80-minute monologue from Fleck, recruit by recruit, telling stories. And that was a lot of fun just to see him. I wouldn't say he was guarded previously, but just how would you describe it, Luke?
I wouldn't say he was guarded either, but I think now that he's proved something, he can push back a little bit more. He's earned. They'll say like you earn equity within a group, and you earn the trust and you spend that back. I think he's starting to spend some of that back, and he's pushing back a little bit. So I liked it. I appreciated the authenticity. And here's the thing, guys: if you weren't a member of the Goal Line Club, you didn't get a chance to go to that event. So that's just the subtle add for them. Make sure that you join the Goal Line Club here in 2020. They're going to be adding a number of events. We'll try and talk about some of the things we might think that they're going to do later. But just stick around for the next ad as well. Okay, Ryan, let's get into this. Let's get into this bowl game here, the Outback Bowl. First of all, I've seen a number of people that are kind of triggered about the whole coconut shrimp blooming onion thing. Have you heard about this?
Yeah, I mean, Minnesota's team coconut shrimp, and I think a majority of people would say that the blooming onion is much better. I don't know where you fall on that spectrum, but I'm sure I'm about to ask.
I live super close to an Outback Steakhouse. Like, I can literally walk to one from my house.
For those of you playing the Gopher Gridiron Radio drinking game at home, literally and figuratively, I can confirm that Luke lives, three blocks from an Outback Steakhouse?
Yeah, and guess what? I've never been to it. I've never been there.
Have you never been? Must be tough, Luke. You get to go to these privy restaurants downtown or something while the rest of us are slumming it out there in Roseville, going to the Keani and
No, I just literally never been to the Outback Steakhouse. I don't know why.
And figuratively?
Yeah, literally.
You have to stay on brand?
Yeah, sorry. I've just never been. So
okay, well, then it just comes down to, are you blooming onion in terms of just like, I'm not going to describe a blooming onion to you. You should know what that is. Not, or are you team coconut shrimp?
Here's the thing. I'm not picky, but I think I would probably tend to lean blooming onion. But I really do like coconut shrimp. Those are pretty good. I have not had the Outback Steakhouse ones, but maybe I'll have to go. This is really good marketing by them. Maybe I have to go and try both. Just try both of them just so I can.
It's almost like that's why they're the sponsor, Luke. It's almost trying to get you to go. It's almost like that's what they're trying to do.
I can imagine
almost succeeding with you.
I can imagine that Darren Rovell will tweet something to the effect of how much, you know, ad sponsorship money this really nets them, you know, by having us talk about this. We should ask him to listen. It's probably not much, but you know, I'd like to get his opinion because that's all he ever tweets about.
God, you're the worst.
All right.
Yes. I mean, there is some outrage. I mean, there's also been some outrage because since we last recorded an episode, Luke, Minnesota's lost a couple coaches.
Yeah, their depth chart for their assistant coaches is pretty low right now. I don't know if you noticed that.
It is. We got word. My gosh, what day was it? It was, I think, December 11th. PJ Fleck learned that Jim Panagos was going to be heading to Rutgers and team up with Greg Schiano.
Which he talked about this at the live event, which I found actually quite humorous. So they were having guys visit, and I think we can all confirm that one of those was Jad Joyner, right? And yep. Panagos informs him that he's leaving, and he is in Minneapolis, so he can recruit Jad Joyner from Minneapolis. And
you know, in fairness, he did wait until he was off campus at the University of Minnesota to do so.
Yeah.
And then he also tried to get Jalen Logan Redding. And then the other guy on campus that weekend, defensive line-wise, was a kid by the name of Wesley Bailey, of which he did get committed to Rutgers. But, you know, the point remains that Panagos decided to, leave on the Saturday of the official visit weekend, 5 days before, or was it 4 days before signing day. And PJ Fleck, as he talked about at the live event, Luke, had to put on his position coach shoes, which he hasn't done for quite some time. And he essentially went up to these recruits and was like, hey, I'm your position coach for now, and I'm going to do everything I can to get you committed. And he was able to get Jad Joyner, a four-star from Connecticut, a defensive lineman, and he was able to flip a Missouri defensive lineman by the name of Jalen Logan Redding. But for those, I mean, here's what I'll say. It makes a lot of sense for Panagos because
yeah.
he gets a pay bump. He's from the East Coast. His parents, who are in their, I believe, 70s or 80s, are over there. His kids, who are in college, are over there. And
he likes to chop wood, probably. Do you think he likes to chop wood, or does he like to roll a bolt more?
And I guess he likes the challenge of trying to build one of the worst programs in college football. But, I mean, I think the point would be, and I've heard Aaron Gleeman talk about this on Gleeman the Geek as he's been breaking down these Twins free agents, and it's like if you were to get it down into terms like for us peasants, Luke, those of us not making
sure.
a ton of money each year, like if you could go from, say you're from Minnesota and you, at your current job, say you're in North Carolina, you're making $60,000 a year. Well, then you get offered an opportunity to go back home to Minnesota and say make $78,000 a year. I mean, it's a no-brainer. It's a paycheck. Yeah, is Auburn a lot worse than Minnesota? Certainly.
You mean Rutgers.
But, yeah. Auburn.
They're not a lot worse than Minnesota.
Certainly not worse. We'll get into that. But, again, I get it for Panagos. I really do. I mean, it makes a lot of sense. More money, better location for where your family's located. Best of luck. And now PJ's got to fill that defensive line. But then
let me add one comment here. The fact that he took this job, you know, at a key recruiting time period where you know, the optics look really bad, but that doesn't necessarily mean that Panagos was malicious in, you know, how the timing worked out. But I do appreciate the subtle jabs that PJ kind of, I don't know that he took them at Panagos, but you know, he said he buckled up and took on the position coach thing, but the optics does look really bad.
It certainly doesn't look great. And that's where I get back down to, for most of the things in this profession, it's not personal, it's just business. I can assure you from my people that I know that are familiar with Jim Panagos' thinking, none of this was anything malicious in intent. None of it really was. He likes PJ Fleck from what I've been told and all of that, but it was an opportunity to go back home and make more money. And that was the timing. Not great. Absolutely. Fleck would tell you, Panagos would tell you, but Minnesota is going to be looking for their fourth new defensive line coach in 4 years now for PJ Fleck.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about the offensive coordinator. I think this one hurts a little bit more for most people. You know, Shiraka did turn down West Virginia last year. I think you've talked about this a lot. He wasn't here for the long term, given, you know, his roots in the East Coast, his kids being out there, almost taking that West Virginia job last year, being a guy from Pennsylvania and being a lifelong Penn State fan. This probably makes a ton of sense. It's not a lateral move, if you ask me. This is a step up for him, probably pay-wise, too. But
you're going to anger some people with this is not a lateral move take.
No, it's not. It's not a lateral move, except for the fact that Penn State probably shouldn't have a football program. Like, we could talk that. That could be its own podcast. But, like, literally, I in terms of the hierarchy, Penn State's viewed as a helmet school. I know that by title wise, this is a lateral move, but probably not in terms of the hierarchy of sought after offensive coordinator positions. I'd say that Penn State's probably higher on the pecking order. That said, this is a good problem to have. I will be honest about that.
It's the first time since certainly I've been covering the team that opposing coaches really want to come in and try to poach your coaches, which you're doing something right. And that's where on Christmas is. Actually, when PJ Fleck learned that Kirk Shiraka was going to take the Penn State job. And obviously, that's not a great Christmas present for him, considering PJ Fleck has only ever had Kirk Shiraka as his offensive coordinator in his head coaching tenure. And that's where, from what I've been told anyway, Shiraka wanted to coach the bowl game. But I think, Luke, you explained it well in the pre-production meeting. I'm going to give you the platform to kind of maybe explain PJ's thinking.
Well, I guess, at least for me, simply put, you know, PJ said that he talked with Mark Coyle about the Panagos thing and basically said, hey, you know, if you're not in, you might as well be out, right? And I guess from my perspective, I completely respect that. And why not be consistent about that? If you're gonna have already taken another job, this is the thing that I find odd, and I kind of respect Fleck for this. When he was at Western Michigan, he probably could have taken any number of jobs before their bowl game, right? But instead, what he did was he didn't talk to anybody, or maybe personally didn't, maybe his agent did, but he didn't talk to anyone. He finished what he had signed up for the given season. And, you know, if you're someone like Shiraka and you took another job, you're already halfway out the door. You might as well be fully out the door. Like, from my perspective, good. Just let him go. It doesn't matter. And I'm personally of the opinion that bowl games aren't that big a deal. I know not a lot of people agree with me, especially sponsors and TV people. But yeah, I'm fine with him basically saying, you know, move on.
Yeah. So I think you explained it a lot better than I could. But for me, again, I'll try to explain it where Luke mentioned it. Kirk Shiraka, if you've been a Gopher Illustrated member, I have alluded to this for years. Kirk Shiraka wanted to get back to the East Coast. That's why he almost took West Virginia, which to me would be a step down last year, is because he really wanted to get closer to family. And Auburn wasn't close enough 2 years ago for him to be able to pull the trigger. Well, when James Franklin comes calling and says, hey, I want to make you the offensive coordinator, put yourself in Kirk Shiraka's shoes. He grew up 90 minutes from Happy Valley. His entire family lives out there. He's got a ton of friends and family out there. It's a pay bump for him. It's a dream job, as he grew up a Penn State fan. And both of his children now, who are in college, go to school on the East Coast.
Here's the other thing, Ryan. Let's add this. If you look at his history, right? He's been at Temple, Western Connecticut State, Delaware Valley, Western Connecticut State again, Princeton, Penn, Delaware, Rutgers, Delaware, Western Michigan, Minnesota, and now Penn State. Almost all of those schools are on the East Coast, with the exception of right. Western Michigan and Minnesota. He has spent his entire career on the East Coast. So, like, I guess you can't blame him. He's an East Coast guy.
And that's where he's getting up in age and his kids are in college and he wants to be as close to them as he can. And now he gets to go get his dream job as a Penn State offensive coordinator, which you know, I was either expecting him to be gone this offseason or at the very latest after 2020. I wasn't expecting him long term. And so what does that mean for Minnesota in this bowl game? Matt Simon is going to get his shot. And one that, if you haven't been reading anything on Gopher Illustrated of late, I think he should be the front runner. And from what I've been told from sources here so far, he is the front runner. And I know there's a lot of people that are concerned about his lack of play calling experience. Essentially, he doesn't have any at the collegiate level. And that's where I would point to Shiraka has been trying to mentor him since Western Michigan. And Matt Simon has been the one calling plays in practice for the Sunday night scrimmages. He was the one calling plays in the spring game. He's been in all the meetings with Shiraka for years. He knows how Shiraka's offense operates. And that's where I think many Gopher fans would agree from what we saw this fall. When that offense is clicking, it's something like we haven't seen in a long, long time here at Minnesota. And that's where Matt Simon's going to get his opportunity to make an impression in the bowl game against the toughest defense that Minnesota's faced all year. So, Matt, no pressure, especially when you're going to be down Daniel Fa'alele.
Yeah. All right, so let's real quick. I have one question for you. I was trying to do some diligence on Shiraka, and just out of curiosity, because I do frequent the college football subreddit. It's pretty entertaining, but I was surprised at the number of Rutgers folks that were totally just ragging on him, like saying he was terrible. He was terrible. I didn't realize outside of Delaware and Rutgers, he has no other offensive coordinator experience. I guess Western Connecticut State, but that was one season. I don't know anything about Western Connecticut State. Like, so did he just have a really good run with PJ? Is that kind of what this is put? Am I building a house of cards here? But did he have a good run with PJ, or is he well respected? Because, I mean, 7 years is a good run. Like, don't get me wrong, but he doesn't have this long tenure of being a top flight offensive coordinator.
The folks I've talked to, I know some respect him as highly as calling him the father of the RPO and the way he's able to adapt it to do certain things where it looks incredibly simple on tape, incredibly simple to the normal eye. And then you try to go out and stop it. And then Rashad Bateman's hitting you for 70 the other way. And that's where I wouldn't say it's a house of cards that you're building against. I think Kirk Shiraka was a really good offensive coordinator, and I still think he is.
Yeah, I don't question that, but he didn't have – I mean, you could argue he maybe didn't really have any experience
before. Yeah. Yeah, he didn't have a ton of experience. Now, he did have some things at Delaware, I believe, before he came to Western Michigan with PJ. But that's where I think that even with Matt Simon – again, I mentioned that. I understand he doesn't have a lot of play-calling experience, but he is one of the best coaches on the staff. And you've seen that through what he's been able to do with the wide receivers, being able to turn that room around in 3 years into what I think is the best wide receiver room in my lifetime. He's a very good football coach. He's been calling plays in practice. He's been under Shiraka's wing. And if you don't think it should be him, I would introduce you to Clay Patterson, who was setting records left and right at the junior college level. And now he's had 2 years under Kirk Shiraka to see what made it so good. And that's where I explained it in the Gopher Illustrated piece that I would elevate Matt Simon to offensive coordinator and wide receivers coach. And then I would move Clay Patterson from tight ends to quarterbacks where he's got experience at the next level or at the junior college level, that is, to make him a passing game coordinator. And I would love to see Patterson and Simon with help from Kenny Burns and help from Brian Callahan really try to diversify this offense, because you're not going to have Tyler Johnson next year. And I think Brevin Spanford, Jake Paulson, and I think you should, again, I think that it should evolve to outside of the wide receivers. Now, when you have the number one and the number two receiver in the Big Ten, yeah, you're going to feature them a lot. And until teams stop them, you really don't need to diversify things. But you're not going to have that luxury in 2020. That's where I'd love to see these young guys get an opportunity for the prices, you know, they've been paying behind the scenes in terms of they've waited their turn. Matt Simon especially has waited his turn for this opportunity. And he's going to get a shot on Wednesday. But I think regardless of the result on Wednesday, if it was up to me, which obviously it's not, I think he would be the guy that you'd go with. So we'll see what PJ Fleck decides here.
I didn't realize that Shiraka and Joe Flacco overlapped at Delaware. That is pretty convenient for Shiraka.
You know what there. The first question I ever asked Kirk Shiraka was?
Huh.
I walked up to him and I introduced myself and I went to him and I said, is Joe Flacco elite? Because do you remember the huge argument in like 2013 was, is Joe Flacco an elite quarterback or not? Plus, you have the PJ Fleck verbiage of using elite and everything.
Yeah. How'd you answer that? How do you answer that?
Yeah. Well, he kind of laughed at me and he was like, he was a darn good quarterback, which if you knew Kirk Ciarrocca, that was about as Kirk Ciarrocca of an answer as it could be. So
sure.
It's going to be interesting. And that's, we'll have to see getting into this Auburn game now, Luke, what Matt Simon and this offensive coaching staff can do against what I'm going to say is the toughest defense they've faced yet. And it's going to be a, battle.
All right, so let's get into that. So the Gophers are going up against this vaunted Auburn defense. Traditionally, a Gus Malzahn team is known for their offense, but ironically this season, they are the highlight of that team is their defense. They're only giving up 18.6 points per game. They're only allowing 323.9 yards in total offense, 208 through the air and 115 on the ground, Ryan. How are the Gophers going to be able, you know, sans Kirk Ciarrocca, be able to overcome this defense?
Even with Kirk Ciarrocca, I don't know how they're going to be able to overcome this defense, because I recognize that many folks, the last taste they saw of Auburn was playing Alabama, where it was a shootout 48-45. To me, that game was played on a completely different planet than what I've watched in terms of Minnesota versus an opponent this year, with the caliber of athletes they have on the field and just doing some silly, silly things. And Auburn's defense is damn good. And it starts with their front seven, and it starts with their defensive line, where they have a top 10 pick in the upcoming NFL draft who did not sit out the bowl game. He's the SEC Defensive Player of the Year, which, Luke, I don't know if you know anything about the SEC Conference. They have a lot of good players, sources would say. And to be named the SEC Defensive Player of the Year, you got to be pretty damn good. And Derrick Brown is pretty damn good. He is incredibly strong. He's 6'5", 310 pounds. He's long. He's strong. He can play the run incredibly well. He can be very disruptive against the pass. And then right next to him is a guy by the name of Marlon Davidson, who is going to be a top 10 pick in the 2021 NFL draft. And, oh, have I mentioned Daniel Faalele? I know PJ Fleck said he's a game-time decision. The guy hasn't practiced. And if you don't practice, Luke, you don't play.
Yeah, usually not.
Lower body injury that I think is going to keep him sidelined all the way until spring ball. And so Minnesota's not going to have the benefit of their six offensive line package unless Brian Callahan and Matt Simon are putting faith in Jason Dixon or someone else to be that guy. And I'm not entirely optimistic that this Gopher offensive line is going to be up to the task against two guys that are incredibly athletic, incredibly physical. And that's where I'm really, really hoping that Matt Simon does not pull a Minnesota Vikings from last Monday night, where the Packers' pass rush was just dismantling the offensive line for Minnesota, and they kept Kirk Cousins in the pocket. That's not going to do anything to mitigate a pass rush. And so that's where I'm hoping that Matt Simon is going to put in some bootlegs, a lot of play action, some sprint outs, some rollouts, get Tanner Morgan moving outside of the pocket to make sure that these big pass rushers for Auburn can't just pin their ears back and know that if I bend the corner on the tackle, Tanner's going to be sitting there at the top of the drop. No, if I start moving them laterally in space, that's where 6'5", 315 can hopefully be lessened a little bit. But we'll get into the specifics of that. So it's a very, very good front seven for Auburn. Luke, you mentioned, I think maybe the most important stat there was that Auburn isn't really allowing anything in the run game. Really nothing. And Minnesota's going to be without their biggest offensive lineman, literally, not figuratively, just literally. How are they going to be able to run the ball enough to give Tyler Johnson, Chris Ottman-Bell, and Rashad Bateman some opportunities to work downfield? I think that's a big question mark for me.
Yeah, absolutely. So real quick, let's get into when the Gophers are on defense. Auburn is averaging 34 points per game, 421 yards of total offense, 210 through the air, and 211 on the ground. I'd say that's pretty balanced there, Ryan.
It certainly is, and they're led by a true freshman quarterback who is named the SEC Freshman of the Year offensively, which I think, or it might have just been SEC Freshman of the Year, which I didn't agree with over an LSU cornerback who has been sensational all year long, but quarterbacks in the media just kind of go hand in hand, apparently. So Bo Nix, which if I had to tell you there was an Alabama quarterback and his name was Bo Nix, would you laugh at me or would you think to yourself, Yeah, that sounds like a kid who would be quarterbacking a team in Alabama.
Yeah. I don't know if you heard me laugh, but I did laugh. Sorry.
Yeah. And that's where this Gus Malzahn offense is very tricky. Minnesota's going to see some looks like they haven't seen all year. They're going to see some different play calls with shotgun and two pulling linemen and just some different variations of what they've seen all season long. And that's where Joe Rossi is going to have to be able to adapt on the fly. He's got to make sure, especially with his defense sans Kamal Martin, who for my money was the most important player on this defense this year. And again, say what you will about Antoine Winfield. Again, I understand he's a first team All-American. He was incredibly clutch in a lot of situations this year. But what I mean by that is Kamal was so important to this front seven, and he's so important because when he was playing and playing well and healthy, he was able to do a lot of different things that the guy behind him was not able to do. And that's where I just think that the step down in play between Kamal Martin and whether it's Breland Oliver or Mariano Soria-Marin, whoever it may be, I think it's going to hurt on Wednesday. And that's where Minnesota's got to be able to put some pressure on Bo Nix. When Bo Nix got into trouble and Auburn lost games, it's because he saw pressure in his face and he made some questionable decisions. He still is a true freshman quarterback. And that's where Minnesota's got to be able to stop the run enough, of which, Luke, do you know who the running back is for Auburn?
No, I don't have the slightest idea.
If I told you his name was Booby Whitlow, would that – and again, I like how that just doesn't faze you because you're thinking to yourself like I am. Yeah, it sounds like a guy who would play football in the state of Alabama, Booby Whitlow.
Hold on.
So you have Bo Nix and Booby Whitlow. And that's where it's going to be if you can't stop Booby and Bo gets going, it's not going to be great. And so that's where we're going to need to see Joe Rossi be very creative, make sure that his defense stays very disciplined because Auburn's going to try to get you leaning one way and come back the other. And they certainly have the athletes. And we'll get into it here in a little bit, Luke. But one of their athletes on the outside is a kid by the name of Anthony Schwartz, who, by the way, was the Gatorade track and field athlete of the year in 2018. Dude ran a 10-0 100 meter and a 24 200 meter. This dude's going to be the Olympics.
Why is he playing football?
Because he really likes football. He's also on the Auburn track team.
Okay, good.
I believe he took fifth in the SEC in the 100 meter this past during his sophomore year here as a sophomore. So we're going to have to see how Minnesota can keep up with that speed. But again, this is why they play the games.
All right. So real quick, we probably got to get another word for the Goal Line Club. Again, we want to thank them for sponsoring us for 2019 and again, sponsoring us in 2020. They've been a great partner for us. And quite frankly, you know, some people have been asking them, hey, you know, why should I support the Goal Line Club? Well, obviously it's to support Gopher football first and foremost, but what do they get with that membership? Well, obviously you get discounts to, you know, live events like the tailgate live events. They're all live. So I don't know why I said live events, but to the tailgate,
to the luncheon,
those were highlights for me this year. They were really fun. For a number of people for the first time that were there, they all said that they had a great time. But just so everybody knows, those are perks that you get money off of those events. But also in addition, they're going to be doing more events throughout the season. We did the Goal Line Club live event before the signing day social. So for those of you that were there, thank you for coming. That was a lot of fun, but I anticipate even more of those kinds of events as members only will be available to you. You know, and first and foremost, just remember that this is a way to support Gopher football. It is tax deductible, etc. So make sure you get out and join the Goal Line Club. It's goalineclub.org. Okay, Ryan, so let's get into this game with Auburn. Specifically, let's get into the betting of this game. When I look at this game right now, I am seeing a 7-point spread. Does that surprise you, first and foremost?
It does. Now, if you told me Minnesota's offense is going to come out and play like they did in their 10 wins this season, sure. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. But if you told me it's going to be a lot closer to their two losses offensively, I wouldn't agree with that line. But something that I want to point out is something that my future father-in-law pointed out to me over the holidays here, and that's that on Sunday, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are going to be playing at Raymond James Stadium. And for those of you who aren't already in Tampa or you haven't looked at the weather, it's been raining there. And we're going to date this. We're recording this Saturday night. And I would imagine that field on Sunday afterwards is going to be pretty banged up. You have a bunch of grown men to run around on it for 3 hours. It makes a lot of sense. Plus, it's already wet because of the rain. And now I'll be heading down there on Sunday, but I believe there's a chance of rain both days. So that field's maybe not going to get a big opportunity to recover. So we might be talking about a field that by the second, third, and fourth quarter isn't exactly in great shape. And then it comes down to what I remember playing like in high school, where at Tartan High School back in 2011, if it was October, that field was an absolute mud pit between the hashes. And then it comes down to who just has better footing. Now, it's going to be taken care of much better because it's an NFL stadium. I understand that. But I think it's an interesting angle to explore.
Yeah, definitely. And for those of you that are still interested in the betting numbers as it pertains to that weather information, the over-under is set at 53.5. So consider, take that information that Ryan has brought up to you. You didn't have to pay anything, and you didn't have to call a 1-800 number either to get that exclusive information.
Yeah, that'd be true. I don't know what next year we should take. We should track our bets against the spread.
We should.
And see how we do and see how we compare. See how bad we are, or how good we are, or how average we are.
All right. So on the season, Auburn is 9-3, and they are also 9-3 against the spread. I find that very interesting. Minnesota obviously is 10-2. They are 7-4-1 against the spread. This game will be televised on ESPN. It is a noon kickoff on New Year's Day. So kudos to the Gophers for making it to a New Year's Day bowl. That is obviously great. Ryan mentioned the weather on Sunday, but the weather for Wednesday, what I see here for a noon kickoff, it'll be in the low 60s to start, probably about 62, 63 at kickoff, moving to probably like the high 60s by the end of the game. Not much wind, maybe 5 miles an hour. Humidity is going to be fairly low at 33%. Doesn't look like so much chance of precipitation either.
Essentially, it's going to be a beautiful September day in Minnesota for this bowl game.
Yes.
Which, if I were to ask you, what's the best weather, would you say?
Oh, it's absolutely fall weather.
Well, what would your degree be?
My ideal.
This is going to make or break this entire podcast.
My ideal degree to be outside just like 50 degrees. Like 50. That's the finance. 50, maybe 55 if I'm golfing, but 50 degrees. I like it kind of cool.
I'd go low 60s, upper 50s. I mean, truthfully, and my better half can attest to this, I'm in shorts and a sweatshirt year round, and that's kind of the way I roll. But if you're telling me it's going to be 61 at kickoff,
yeah, beautiful.
Yeah, that's going to play well. I'm going to be in a nice polo and shorts and enjoying that Florida sun.
Yeah, it's going to be gorgeous football weather, that's for sure. Okay, Ryan, let's get to your keys of the game for this game against Auburn.
If Minnesota is going to have a shot, and if they're going to pull the upset, number one, they got to keep Tanner Morgan upright, because the biggest challenge for Matt Simon as his interim offensive coordinator is going to be making sure that Morgan's got time to throw the ball. Now, when you look at where Auburn's defense ranks defensively throughout this entire season, they are third in the country per Football Outsiders, behind only Ohio State and Clemson. They are fourth in the country in Bill Conley's S&P, and Luke would attest we're big fans of the S&P here.
Absolutely.
They are 12th in defensive expected points added and 8th in opponent rushing plays in terms of 8th in run defense per College Football Data. Now, for comparison, both Wisconsin and Iowa are in the top 20 in most of these, but Auburn is above them. So you saw how Minnesota's offense struggled against those top elite defenses. And now they're not going to be without Daniel Faalele. So how does that come into play? And that's where the biggest matchup of the game is going to be: Auburn's front seven against the Gophers' offensive line. We talked about Derrick Brown, who, if you haven't heard already, the SEC Defensive Player of the Year. He's incredibly strong against the run, generates a lot of pressure as an interior defensive lineman. And then they also have Marlon Davidson, who also has 11.5 tackles for loss, and he led the team with 6 sacks. They have 2 havoc wreakers on that defensive front, and Brian Callahan is going to have his offensive line play the best game of their season if Minnesota is going to be able to pull off the upset. Because if not, I can tell you right now, it's going to be a long day for this offense. And it's going to be a long day specifically for Tanner Morgan. Minnesota is going to have to figure out how they run the ball without Faalele. And that means you're not going to have the luxury of going to that six offensive line package that was so effective and efficient for Minnesota for largely the entire Big Ten slate. When they had all six offensive linemen ready and going and healthy, Minnesota was rushing for 200-300 yards a game. Auburn ranks 20th in the country with only 115 rushing yards per game, 18th in the country in yards per carry allowed, and they've only allowed 9 rushing touchdowns in 12 games. That's 7th in the country. So if Minnesota is going to be able to move the ball, you're going to have to get Auburn's corners going, because what Auburn likes to do is be very aggressive in their front seven. So what does that mean for the back end, Luke? That means a lot of man coverage on the outside. And sources would tell me that Tyler Johnson, Rashad Bateman, pretty good in one-on-one coverage this year. And that's where if Minnesota can get the ball out to them in that one-on-one coverage, Johnson and Bateman have shown that they can break tackles, that they can make big plays, and they can be the reason why Minnesota continues to be in this game. So if I'm Minnesota, and if they're going to have a shot offensively, you have to get the ball out of Morgan's hands quick so that pass rush cannot get on top of you. And you have to make sure that you have a cornucopia of plays that are either bootlegs, sprint outs, rollouts, get Morgan moving outside the pocket so that pass rush can't get home. Now, the second one is something I already talked about, so I'll be brief. You have to get pressure on Bo Nix. Bo Nix is a true freshman quarterback for Auburn. They're going to see a lot of different wrinkles defensively, so Joe Rossi is going to have to make sure that this game plan is very sound. But I would expect Minnesota to dedicate 7 or 8 men to the box. Make sure that Auburn can't run the ball. Make sure that, especially sans Kamal Martin, you have as many bodies as you possibly can in there. And that means you're going to have Coney Durr and Benjamin St. Juice on an island for most of the game, where they're going to be matched up with Seth Williams, who is a big physical receiver on the outside. And then the aforementioned Anthony Schwartz, who is the Gatorade Track and Field Player of the Year. If Schwartz gets a step on you, you're not going to catch him. I don't care who you are, unless your name is Usain Bolt. You're not going to catch Anthony Schwartz. So you're going to have to be able to be physical with these guys at the line of scrimmage so they can't get out of their breaks. If the Gophers are able to limit things in the run game, they're going to need big games and even career games from guys like Carter Coughlin, Sam Renner, Braylon Oliver to be able to get home on Bo Nix, who is going to be very slippery in the pocket. But when turnovers have piled up for Nix as this true freshman quarterback, it's when the pressure gets to him and he makes very silly throws. So that's going to be the biggest task for Joe Rossi in this defense. Slow down Auburn's running attack and make Bo Nix beat you. Now, Luke, what do you think my final key to the game would be? I don't know that you could even possibly fathom what it might be.
Well, I have to imagine that it has to do with special teams, because at this point we haven't talked about special teams. And I know that, you know, you always talk about the stove and touching it when it's hot and something about getting burned in special teams. So I don't know, remember how it all fits together again. But, you know, if you're in a game, you probably don't want to lose because of special teams.
I'm just happy that for the final time in 2019, I have to talk about those special teams. I'm just so thrilled. And then next year, Luke, we get to talk about a 26-year-old Australian punter.
Yeah. By the way,
Mark Crawford.
By the way, your joke about the fact that, you know, he maybe should date grad students, that was really good.
For those who don't know what he's talking about, that's why you got to show up to GLC events where I make jokes about grad students. That's what we do. So with Gopher special teams, for those who maybe have forgot, because it's been a month since Minnesota played a game, let me refresh your memory. Auburn, special teams, they're pretty good. They're 30th best in the S&P. Minnesota's 93rd by that same metric. Auburn special teams by Football Outsiders, they're 10th. Minnesota's 98th. And then finally, by everyone's favorite ESPN FPI, Auburn special teams are above average. They're 43rd. Minnesota's 100. And 26th out of 130 teams. But what is that but just another day in the life for Rob Winger and this special teams unit? So one area that I'm going to be watching specifically is going to be Minnesota's punt unit versus Auburn's punt return. I mentioned that because Minnesota's punt unit allowed -3 punt return yards all season. That has to be the best in college football.
Seriously?
No. Seriously, they allowed -3 yards. Well, it's because every Jacob Herbers punt, I would tell you, would be about 36 yards in a cloud of dust, and so they can't return it. But, you know, I hope Herbers has like a 49 average with four inside the 20. And
how do we know he's not playing baseball right now?
If he's not punting, Lord help us. I don't know who is. So Minnesota's punt return or punt coverage unit's pretty good. While Auburn's punt returner, Christian Tutt, averages 15 yards per punt return on 20 plus attempts. So this is a guy who is incredibly explosive with the ball in his hands on a punt return, yet Minnesota doesn't allow punt returns. So for the final time of 2019, it's with somber tones in my voice that I say, for 1 week, go for special teams. One single week, no shank punts, no penalties, no block kicks, no missed PATs, no kickoffs out of bounds, no muffed punts or fumbles or self-inflicted wounds. Please don't be the reason why Minnesota loses the Outback Bowl.
I'm just excited to hear you never do that again. Like, I don't want to hear that rant
trust
ever
me,
again.
I'm so sick and tired about talking about special teams, but until they just become like an adequate unit, they're hurting the football team and they're hurting the chances of Minnesota winning a game. So we have to touch on it. Trust me, I'm the purveyor of positivity when it comes to Gopher football, or at least I think I am. So for me to rag on special teams each week, I do not take any pleasure in it.
Okay. Honest question here. Do you think Wenger's back?
I don't know what they'd be waiting for if he's not. Like, what are we – like, he did go out and sign the top international punter in the world, apparently, with 26-year-old Mark Crawford, which we'll see. I mean, I'm very intrigued by this experiment where if he's here all 4 or 5 years, we're talking about a 31-year-old punter.
But here's the thing that's really funny to me. Like, he's 26, sorry. The guy didn't even...
Him and I are separated by 1 year. Think about that.
Yeah.
My old self and Mark Crawford, who is now going to have 5 years of eligibility.
Yeah, he didn't even come on campus. Like, not...
He has never even met a Gopher coach.
Yeah, like, that's wild to me that you do that. But then again, you know, whatever floats your boat, literally. That I did not mean to make that pun.
It's wild.
Yeah, it's still wild, but whatever. I hope he is an elite punter. I really
trust
do.
Me, I hope. I mean, I'd be crushing. What's the Australian beer?
Foster's.
Is it Foster's?
Or yeah, whatever. Foster's, Foster's, whatever.
I'll be crushing Foster's if this dude turns out to have like a 46 average and he actually can punt the ball over 50 yards. I'm all for it, man.
Well, here's the thing. Here's actually the thing. If he does have an insane freshman campaign, he could go straight to the NFL, right? Because he'll be X number of years removed.
We could make some merch off that in terms of making some kind of Australian connection to rowing the boat.
Yeah.
You can buy it.
Yeah.
Trust me. I hope Mark Crawford is the next, what's the kid from, you would know this. The kid from Kentucky, who's also from Perth, Australia, who just won, I believe, the punter of the year in college football. It's Max something.
I hope he has
that kind of impact for Minnesota in 2020. I hope he does.
I do, we'll too. I absolutely do as well. All right, so we probably should wrap this up and get to our predictions. Mr. Burns, I'm going to give you the honors here.
All right, let's do this. I'll say this. It's a tough spot for Matt Simon to be thrown into as he gets a week. I mean, Minnesota's game plan has essentially all been done. Now he gets to make his tweaks to it. But your quote-unquote audition game is against one of the best defenses in college football, and their studs are playing, whereas Minnesota's right tackle isn't. And we're going to see how it goes. So if Simon and this offense can figure out a way to move the ball consistently, not let their defense get gassed, because the worst case scenario would be Minnesota puts up a fight for a half, but then their defense just gets gassed because the offense can't move the ball. They're on the field too long. Auburn's athletes finally find space that they didn't have in the first and second quarter, and it doesn't look great at the end of the day. Now, I ultimately think Minnesota has the motivation to play in this game, which that's the biggest thing that you and I have to discuss here before we end it off is motivation. Like,
yes,
it is the biggest unknown into every single one of these bowl games.
Right.
I'll say this. You will know within the first two drives of both teams what team is going to win that game. You will.
Because I don't know if you know who's going to win. I think what you can say is, will this be a game where both teams play, or is one basically mailed it in already?
Which, more times than not, the team that wants to be there compared to the team that's going to mail it in, the team that wants to be there is going to win. And I have every reason to believe that Minnesota is going to try their – I mean, they're going to try their best. Silver linings, right?
Right.
I mean, but Matt Simon, I think the players are going to really want to play for him, really want to make sure that he's the one that gets the job.
Right.
The defense wants to prove, especially with maybe Antoine Winfield in his final game with Carter Coughlin, that they were for real in 2019.
Right.
Now, it sounds like Auburn wants to play too, which, cool. But, like, we don't know. And especially in bowl season, you look at some of these games, like USC, I mean, they mailed it in starting in that second half. They
okay, being a guy that watches a decent amount of Pac-12, their defense is horrible. Like, it's so bad. And they totally mailed it in, which made it look worse, but their defense is so bad.
And that's where, again, you just need to show up and play. And that's where I think Minnesota will. But saying both teams show up, I think Auburn wins this on a neutral field, of which it is a neutral field. Auburn wins 28-21, but I think Tyler Johnson ends up breaking another single-season record. And I believe it's a career touchdown record. If Tyler Johnson catches one more touchdown, if he does that against Auburn here, I think he passes Ron Johnson for the receiving touchdown lead all time. And for those of you who'd like to take a little stroll down Narrative Street with me, you'll remember to the bowl game last year where Minnesota force-fed Tyler Johnson the ball to get him a couple of single-season records last year. So Minnesota has shown that they will take the stroll down Narrative Street to get guys records, and Matt Simon is the wide receivers coach. I think they're going to try to get Tyler Johnson the ball quite a bit.
Yeah. All right. So for my prediction, I'm with you in you're going to find out pretty quickly whether or not this is, one, going to be a game, and two, who really wants to be there. I do think that both teams do want to be there based on everything we've read thus far. That said, the one thing I will add is whether you want to be there can also be dictated by an early lead. Very rarely, with the lone exception of maybe was it a Sun Bowl where Glenn Mason was up, I don't know, 30 some points, and then that Gopher team lost to Texas Tech. That's pretty rare in bowl games to have giant comebacks like that. But I too am going to pick Auburn here. I do think that just their defense is probably just going to be too much. I will take Auburn 24-17.
So if you're with us, you're taking the under and you would end up in a push.
But correct.
What a season it's been for this podcast. I mean, we'll come back after the bowl game here and we'll get Derek Burns back and we'll break it down. And we'll also have a signing day show, of which I'll probably bring on Gobi to break on some things, break down this recruiting class with us.
Do you think Gobi would take offense to having me try to pronounce his name like live on a phone call?
He'd be fine. But I mean, Luke, what a 2019 this podcast had, and we can't thank each and every one of you guys enough.
Yeah, it has been pretty incredible, just the growth of the podcast and the number of you that listen. We appreciate it. It's kind of humbling to think that people actually want to listen to Ryan Burns talk about football, because we all know you're not here for me. And I apologize to all of you for the number of colds I had this season. Rumor has it that, you know, after your kid turns one, they get fewer colds. So I appreciate you slogging through this specific episode and through these specific episodes this season where I had a cold. But in all honesty, no joking around anymore, it's been a phenomenal season. We've had a ton of fun, and we really appreciate you all of you listening. So thanks again, and join us throughout the off season. We will do some stuff, and it should be a good time. So stay subscribed to the podcast. Continue to check your feed here and there, and follow us on Twitter. I don't know if we've ever broadcast. I don't know if we've ever said what our Twitter handle is, and I don't even know what it is, Ryan. What is the podcast Twitter handle? Because that's where we post most of the information.
It's Gopher Radio.
Gopher Radio. Yes.
All one word, Gopher Radio. You're Luke Buer. I'm Ryan Burns, MN.
Yes, correct. But follow Gopher Radio for updates in regards to the podcast. Just follow that. That's probably your best chance to get information. Otherwise, just keep attuned to your aggregators, and we'll have more information coming. Again, thanks for listening, and go Gophers.